So let me welcome everyone who is joining us on Clubhouse. This is Matthias Knapp, our host. Today we have an exciting session, More Money and Meaning, incorporating ESG into your portfolios and also into your personal portfolios. We have a fantastic panel. I'm going to ask the panelists to introduce themselves quickly, but let me also inform you that I am just making the introduction today. The session will be then moderated by Niti Jada. So welcome again to this Clubhouse session. Welcome everyone who's joining us on YouTube and Facebook. Please also sign up on opalesk.com/live so that you can get alerts on our future sessions. So, Niti, let me pull you up here on my screen for everyone who is watching you live. There is a screen now coming up with your photo. Please quickly introduce yourself, Niti.
Great. Thank you, Matthias. Hi, everyone. My name is Niti Chadha. I'm the founder and CEO of Enzo Advisors. We are a global sustainability consulting firm focused on helping both corporations and investors to help build sustainable business models within an ESG construct. And I look forward to connecting with my two fellow panelists.
Right, let's go ahead with Kristen O'Grady.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here. Kristen O'Grady. I am COO and head of product for Seeds Investor. We are a fintech platform that enables financial advisors to create portfolios that align clients' personal values and their financial goals. And before that, I spent almost 15 years in product development for large asset managers and banks. So great to be here.
Fantastic. And finally, Megahan Peterson.
Hi, everybody. I'm Director of Sustainability at Enzo Advisors. I work with Niti to help grow the business. And I have about 5 years experience in ESG. And before that, I was in international development.
Great, thank you. I'm calling now Niti. Niti, please go ahead.
Great. Well, thank you, first of all, Matthias, for the time, and then Kristen and Megan for the panel. Really excited for today's conversation. And in light of what we've seen over the last year, really the last 2 years, with the growth in ESG and the so-called fad that folks thought it was, has really turned into more of a movement. And in fact, it's in many cases a tectonic change that we're seeing. And it's the underlying factor, whether it's regulation, whether it's market demand, whether it's corporate social responsibility and the focus, are all leading this to a multi-year trend. And I want to kick things off by talking a little bit about this past year. Since the pandemic, there has been a significant focus on corporate social responsibility across the board, whether it's companies, institutional investors, or even individuals who are managing their own personal portfolios. There is more of a focus around people wanting to invest based on their personal values. So, Kristen, if we can kick it off with you, how does a retail investor begin to think about aligning their values to their personal portfolios? Where do they even begin?
Great question. And the time is really now for all of us to really look at and know what we're either intentionally or unintentionally supporting with both how we're spending our money and then also how we're investing our money. So I think that's the biggest thing, to first have the awareness, you know, by buying something or by investing in a company, what is that company supporting? And do you agree with that? Do you align with that? And, you know, especially now throughout the last year with the pandemic and with now all of the social justice issues that have come to light and climate change, you know, it's more important than ever. And we're seeing more and more demand and for people looking at, hey, how are my investment dollars really affecting the world? What am I investing in? And, you know, given this, especially the time right now, we're all looking for this meaning and this knowledge. It's very powerful to understand how you're investing. And just one quick example, you know, many of us, you know, are believing in the social justice reform, et cetera. And we don't realize that some of the index funds or even mutual funds that we're invested in just our main investment portfolios could be invested in private prison companies. So once you start actually looking at what's underlying some of these very broad market indices, we can see that there's certain companies that we may not agree with. And so that's why, you know, at Seeds, we first understand what individuals' values are, and then we're building intentional portfolios of companies that are making positive choices for the earth and for people. And so, you know, in this talk, we can definitely talk more about how then to shift your what you're invested in the companies and the products to align with your values. And but the first step is really acknowledging that and understanding what you own.
And Kristen, one other follow-up to that. Are you seeing the demand mostly amongst the millennials, or is this fairly broad-based?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I know, especially a few years ago, it was very, you know, a lot of people thought that sustainable investing or ESG investing was very like a millennial thing and younger generation. But we're seeing, you know, speaking with advisors and the end clients, it's really all demographics and all ages that we're seeing this be something really relevant to and important to. Because it's not, you know, it's become mainstream in that, you know, ESG is what are the themes and how is a company operating as it relates to efficiency and operations in, you know, earth issues, how they're treating their people, which is the S for social issues, and then corporate governance. And so if you think about it, that's just really could be relevant to anyone. It's just good business to actually treat your employees well, have good policies in earth. So we're, you know, when we're talking to clients about, hey, do you want to understand, do you want to align your portfolio with your values and companies that are making choices that you also believe in? Really, that's across the board. We're seeing demand for that.
Great. And that, you know, speaking to the corporates and thinking about good business models, Megan, if you can chime in here and tell us a little bit about your experience from a company and institutional investor standpoint, how does ESG fit into how they're thinking about their business models? How does ESG fit into the fact that it is driving long-term value creation, and maybe a little bit more about your work with Enzo Advisors?
Sure. So in addition to individuals, we're also seeing that companies and institutional investors are really looking and reevaluating the way that they're impacting the worlds that they operate in. So they're looking at their essential operations. So at Enzo, what we do is we work with companies and investors to improve their operations and make them more sustainable, positively impacting both stakeholders and shareholders. So this actually flows down to individual investors and individuals that care about these things. It's really because of this consumer drive, companies can't live or operate in isolation.
And it's very interesting because there often is this misconception, and I often hear this at the institutional investor level, that if you invest in ESG or any consideration of a values-based investing approach could sacrifice returns. Now, we've seen a lot of academic research supporting the long-term value creation, but I was curious, you know, what data have you all seen in terms of supporting that investors who are owning companies that have better ESG profiles are likely to outperform over the long term? Kristen, we'll start with you here.
Yeah, actually, there's no inherent return give up to sustainable investing. So, you know, years ago, when sustainable investing really started, it was more of a negative screen, which means, you know, taking out either an industry or a company. And once you start just negative screen or taking things out, there could be some type of return give up, of course, because then it's hard to diversify the portfolio. But now that ESG is much more proactive and really analyzes a business's operations, and we believe that is actually, you know, understanding how a company operates and how efficient it is and how it treats its employees is actually a better long-term value for the company. And so we've seen that, especially over the last year. If you look at, you know, mutual funds, ESG mutual funds versus traditional funds, they performed better from you know, many Morningstar reports, et cetera. So, you know, when you start thinking about it, and you think about this is just another factor, more risk factors and also opportunities to look at companies and see how they're operating more efficiently, then of course it makes sense that this could be a way of evaluating a better company for the long run. So a company that adds more value, and then that could affect its financial performance as well, of course.
That's an important point. And even for my years of being a portfolio manager and just being on the buy side for 10 plus years, one piece of information that's very interesting is that from a portfolio manager's standpoint, you look at ESG initially as a risk management tool. But as we've gotten more and more in the weeds with working with companies from an advisory standpoint, we're definitely seeing a lot of opportunities from a value creation standpoint. And so now we look at really three main value creation drivers: improving revenue, improving margins, and then improving the cost of capital. And we evaluate all that as part of our work with companies and even helping institutional investors think about those characteristics as they define the best-in-class business models. And there's a lot of research out there that talks about some of the outperformance. Megan, given your background, both at Enzo and particularly from MSCI, do you have any thoughts on some of the research that you've seen over the past year or so?
Yeah, actually, Kristen brings up a really great point. A really good case study is a lot of the articles that have come out from Morningstar, MSCI, Morgan Stanley, and during coronavirus, a lot of the ESG indexes and sustainable funds have outperformed against their peers during Q1, and by at least 4.3 percentage points. There's another Morningstar report that was released in January that also stated that funds that have less ESG risk beat their benchmark indexes more often and by larger margins. So this isn't something that's really going to go away. If you're really looking at the opportunities in the market as well as the risk, it just is a straightforward argument.
Yeah, and we've looked at prior cycles as well, and even in previous downturns and irrespective of market cycles, the sustainable indices have all outperformed, and there's been a tendency for less volatility as well. And we've looked at it, really in the last 10, 15, even 20 years, and it seems to be the case. Maybe the percent or the delta changes, but overall, they've definitely outperformed with less volatility. So it's interesting stats on that. And, one other misconception that we look at is there is a skew towards owning technology stocks that really drives the outperformance in ESG funds. And last year is a good example of that, where, of course, the tech companies, just given what we've seen during COVID, many of which outperformed as we pivoted to an e-commerce model. But is this a misconception, or is this something that we should be considering, as a investor who is looking to build in more ESG exposure? And, Kristen, what do you see from a seeds portfolio standpoint? Are there other sectors that are in favor in the market, or will ESG funds always be skewed towards technology?
Yeah, great question. I'd love to actually comment on something that you had said, because I thought it was a great point, Nidhi, about the long-term, historical performance, because, it is it's very easy to see the last year ESG funds performing, but I do think it's something that's been the case over, many, many, many years. It's just haven't had the data for it, right? So now that companies are more reporting and getting more and more consistent and more funds are talking about ESG, we can track it better. But I do think, like we were saying, analyzing these types of factors in terms of business operations and corporate integrity probably always made the difference for companies in terms of their long-term case. So I wanted to mention that first. But then to your point, there is a misconception in the market, totally aware of that, where, of course, ESG has performed well over the last year because many of the large ESG funds are overweighted technology stocks or the FANG stocks. And while, I'm aware of that, for seeds portfolios in particular, we've outperformed the S&P on average by almost 20% over the past year, and all of that without holding any tech stocks. So I don't think the case for ESG is just going to, change once the tech stocks go out of favor. I think this type of ESG integration in investment valuation and across kind of all companies and all sectors makes a lot of sense. So for seeds portfolios, we're diversified. We have similar performance on the equity side to the S&P 500. And, we believe in the ESG integration as another layer to really analyzing and constructing portfolios that can grow wealth, but also align with people's values. So I don't think it's, I don't think the tech stock argument is necessarily valid. And I think ESG is something that, it won't even be called ESG in the future. It's going to be just portfolio, good portfolio management, good portfolio investment.
That's very helpful. And Megan, you've done some work on the tech sector at Enzo Advisors in terms of looking at the ESG ratings profiles and really getting into the weeds from a material factor standpoint. What are you seeing on that front, on the technology point?
So I think there's a lot of pressure for tech companies in a few areas, such as data privacy, security, and labor issues, just to name a few that Kristen has brought up as well. And there is something to say that big tech CEOs can't really ignore this pressure. Amazon's a really good example because that's not in a lot of ESG funds or indexes. And with ESG funds really growing and expected to grow more in 2021, large companies really can't ignore the need to implement changes and increase their ESG ratings. So they'll be really missing out on a large market opportunity if they don't move.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're seeing a really mixed bag in terms of the tech sectors and what they're doing on the ESG front. I mean, there are some companies that are best in class that are doing quite a bit on the climate side, as well as the social, particularly the D&I front, which has been very interesting, whereas others have been lagging. And I think we have seen over the past year that even their response to COVID has been mixed and it's been all over the map. And as we've been looking at some of these new CSR or corporate social responsibility reports that are coming out, we're starting to see that some of these underlying issues they've many companies have touched upon, but we probably still have a long way to go. The other thought would be, you know, as we're looking at ESG investments and we're thinking about what the retail investor wants and then what they're being advised to from their financial advisors, I was really surprised to read this one statistic. It noted that 2/3 of millennials felt their advisors should include ESG investments in the portfolio, but really only 1 out of 3 did that. And I was curious why there's this disconnect. I would imagine that given this demand, financial advisors would be incorporating ESG into their work to match this demand. And Kristen, just given your experience with Seeds and being so close to the customer, what are you hearing from feedback and what are some of the challenges they face in adopting this?
Yeah, it's a great point. The demand for this type of investing is huge and it's been growing, especially over the last year. I think it's more than doubled in terms of flows. And not just for millennials, as we discussed earlier, it's really across all demographics. And so a majority of people would want to invest in this way if their advisor, you know, this opportunity was brought up to them by their advisor, or they knew about it. But many people aren't necessarily proactive with their advisor asking for this. And so I think the difficult part and what we, you know, when we're working with advisors as Seeds is that advisors don't know, you know, how to have the conversation. They are advisors, especially lately and then in the future, they're going to be so integral in integrating with their clients' lives in terms of being a partner and making decisions, helping their clients make decisions in their lives and what's important to them. And so, you know, if they bring this up with their clients, just like any other service in terms of planning for their lives, many clients would definitely want to align their values. And so what we're seeing at Seeds is one of the advisory teams we're working with, they brought it up to about 50 of their clients and they brought it up. They didn't just say, oh, like, hey, have you heard of ESG? Do you want to have ESG investing? Because, you know, most of us don't even know what ESG means. It's just really just an acronym. What's important is what does it mean, right? So if an advisor says, you know, would you be interested in exploring how we could align your personal values with your investment portfolios. When clients are asked in that way, I think only 4 of the client out of 50 said they were not interested in exploring that. And so there's a huge opportunity here for advisors that we're seeing, and that's really the genesis of Seeds and what we're doing. We're enabling the advisors to have the conversation. They can walk through a simple survey and get to the heart of what's important to a client. And then they can present the client with a multi-asset investment portfolio, core investment portfolio that aligns with those values and also aligns with the client's financial goals. So, I think it's really important for advisors to be proactive in that way.
And a quick follow-up for you. Are you seeing that disconnect or potential opportunity in the equity side, fixed income side, or really all the above?
Really all of it. And so I think so what's important is that when an advisor is presenting a portfolio or even for a retail investor to create a portfolio, that as much as possible, they can really present all asset classes. So for seeds on the equity side, we customize equity portfolios. So of individual companies built for what the client says is important to them. But that's also can be a really quality, general building block in the portfolio, general equity portfolio. And then on the fixed income side, as part of the seeds proposal, we have a fixed income portfolio that's made up of funds. And we've recently partnered with AllianceBernstein, who we are presenting as the municipal solution. They have a great municipal impact portfolio. And so having all of those building blocks for a client, the equity piece, the taxable fixed income, and the tax-exempt fixed income, we feel so important. And, it's not 100% perfect yet. As the data and the investment and the companies start disclosing more consistently, et cetera, I think there'll be more asset classes and more choices, et cetera. But I think for a core of a portfolio, we've gotten really great feedback from advisors and the end client.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And congratulations on that partnership as well. That's definitely a big step and really shows a lot of opportunity across asset classes for you all. And as we think about, since you mentioned AllianceBernstein, Megan, we're thinking about the institutional investor base, and you work with them closely, not only just at Enzo's, but even more broadly at MSCI. What were you seeing from the standpoint of, what is going to make them be more focused on integrating ESG into their portfolios and really looking into these academic research pieces and delving deeper to understand, how they could incorporate ESG better into their portfolios? And what's going to drive that impetus for the institutional market, do you think?
So I think Kristen really said it very well, that ESG just needs to be a part of the investment process. A lot of financial advisors are struggling with, and institutional investors are struggling with being able to tell the story of why. It's getting better. Data will be getting better, but it is, again, that struggle with the data. And clients still want a return above all else. So really telling that story and clearly linking return to ESG and sustainability as an opportunity for resilience returns is critical. And ESG just needs to be made a little bit more mainstream, which it will over the next year. But it just needs to be an essential part of the portfolio creation process as opposed to something that's niche.
Yeah, that's a very critical point that you both are highlighting, is how important it is to integrate ESG and thinking about it from that risk management and the value creation lens across the entire operations of a company. And that impacts it both from a corporation standpoint and then feeds into the institutional levels, as Megan, you called out earlier. And Megan, the other point I would say is that there's just been this lack of transparency and consistency across standards, and that's been the challenge in ESG adoption as well. It looks like we are seeing some more regulations requiring disclosure, some collaboration across these frameworks. So that should hopefully start addressing this roadblock. Could you talk a little bit about your experience at Enzo Advisors and how is Enzo helping companies, institutions address this transparency and consistency issue?
So as you mentioned, there's the consistency issue where there's so many frameworks out there and our clients are really struggling to figure out what would be best practice. So what we do is at Enzo is we come in with a cross-functional approach when we're implementing ESG at companies, making sure that it touches upon the company's core operations. As we said before, really looking at a full company's operations is also unlocking opportunities for companies. So you're looking at it from both a risk management and a value creation. So what we do is we structure a company's strategy and reporting, taking into account all relevant ESG standards that can be fully integrated into company's specific operations, and then make sure that it can be reported in a comprehensive, reliable, and measurable way. So that also improves the data that's out there and helps investors be able to build and make that use case. This data that is reported needs to really show progress against targets. One of the largest pressures facing companies in the wake of 2020 is to have more comprehensive reporting, especially on climate and diversity, equity, inclusion. So we've really focused the beginning of this year in developing comprehensive frameworks around climate to help companies build a credible plan to help them with their commitments to net zero and make sure that their plan's credible with complete transparency, looking across specific areas in climate accounting, strategy, financial impact, and making sure that's appropriately communicated. We also have developed a DEI framework, which is a scoring tool that's pretty unique because it integrates human, intellectual, social, relational outcomes to financial outcomes by looking at the impact to stakeholders and risk, and the risk of not integrating and improving practices as well. And then looking what is realistic for companies and how difficult to implement certain measures.
Very helpful. And Kristen, in terms of thinking about the climate side, climate change or diversity and inclusion and other topics, is there a specific topic when you speak to investment advisors that's top of mind right now? Is it all the above, or where is that greatest need for transparency and consistency?
Yeah, and I think Megan made great points about the company's operations and how that flows into the metrics and evaluation. I think it's all of the above, and especially when you're working with advisors and then working with end clients that, let's say, maybe like all of us, that maybe we haven't considered very, very specific issues, but we do believe in companies that, you know, have efficient operations and treat their employees well, that the way to talk about it can be in a more general but meaningful way. And so when we at Seeds talk to our clients and in our technology platform and survey process, we talk about like more general issues. So recycling or corporate integrity or privacy and data security. So a financial advisor can give examples to their clients about, hey, like, do you, for certain social media platforms, like, are you okay with them taking our data and or how they're using that, et cetera? So issues that people may care about. And I do think across the board, especially in the past year, you can make the case that, you know, the climate change, social issues, kind of all of it is really bubbled up in a really great way, because now that it's all in focus, both companies, as Megan was talking about, as well as individual investors can really do something about it now.
That's very helpful. And yeah, you know, one thing I would say on this point on transparency and consistency and how important it is that there is a lot of greenwashing out there right now, and companies and institutional investors trying to check the box on ESG. So being able to articulate that transparency and consistency with a very disciplined process, whether you're coming from a corporate lens or an investor lens, as you both are coming from different vantage points, it's very critical. And I think for companies to be able to make decisions and be able to have that transparency, and same with investors, to know exactly what's going on, how companies plan to achieve their goals, what companies are doing to make a difference, is all very, very relevant. So I appreciate that both of you are coming in from a process that provides that transparency.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And because that data is not yet consistent, but hopefully we'll get more and more so as companies report more and there's more consistency in the regulation and how they do that. Hopefully that will become more and more consistent and be beneficial for investors to compare companies apples to apples. You know, with our Seeds process, we're also a sub-advisor. So we're creating and managing portfolios. We bring in a lot of the different large data sources, a lot of different data, but then we believe in an active management, like a human element, to actually then evaluating the companies as well. And we think that's very important, especially as the data is not 100% consistent and in how companies are thinking about it. We really need that type of human investor in terms of in the data-driven process to create and customize portfolios for clients.
And speaking of active and passive investments and just thinking about the landscape, it just seems like there's so many investment options out there right now and many fintech solutions for investors and individuals, financial advisors. How do we even begin to evaluate these platforms? Kristen, you could probably give us a start on this question, you know, just given your background here. What should we be looking for and what differentiates Seeds from the rest of these fintech solutions?
Yeah, it's a great question. And my background is in investment product development. So, you know, a lot of my background is in creating mutual funds and ETFs and all that. And I think for the right type of exposure investment, like there's nothing wrong with having an ETF or a fund, et cetera. But to your point, for in ESG in particular, there's so many products now, and it's very confusing for individual investors and also for advisors to use these products and create different portfolios. And so I think first is just to understand what you own. So actually looking at the indices, as we talked about before, and seeing what underlying holdings they're really invested in and supporting. For seeds, and why I left, why I left big asset management and a bank to be part of creating seeds in the platform is I really think with ESG investing and ESG integration, it takes a customized bottom-up approach. So it's really important, especially because values are personal, to understand how the individual investor thinks and what's important to them, and then create a portfolio that both meets their long-term financial goals, so it's diversified, but is investing companies that really align with that in how they, you know, what they believe in terms of social issues and the environment, et cetera. And luckily with the data now, like I said, the data-driven process, more and more you can evaluate investments in that way. And so I think we definitely need to be careful of greenwashing, as you mentioned, Nidhi. So a lot of mutual funds that are now called ESG may have a long track record, but really just changed their name maybe a few months ago. So I would be wary of that, or like small tweaks to the process to add some type of layer. But if it's not integrated into, you know, the investment management team's full approach in how, you know, just like financial metrics, they're looking at different ESG metrics and really integrating that in how they're making these investment decisions, I'd be wary of that. But yeah, I think for platforms, there's definitely different differentiators. And like I said, for the customized personalization of really having an easy process to understand a client's values and then be able to present a really fully integrated ESG portfolio to a client. That's what we're doing at Seeds with financial advisors.
That's phenomenal. And I want to hold on to this greenwashing point for a bit. There is so much noise right now, both for institutions and corporations to navigate through. Megan, I recall there was a SEC risk alert that was issued more recently, and there's been some regulation changes in the EU. Could you comment on either of those two in terms of, you know, how this could help address some of the greenwashing issues that we're seeing right now?
Yep, sure. So I would say this year is the big pressure for investors. As Kristen's noted, a lot of funds have been ESG or sustainability or green in name. And the SEC recently came out with a risk alert just looking at showing or disclosing the areas that their analysts are going to be looking at as far as ESG funds to see if they're just ESG in name. On the other side of that, the EU has activated regulation called SFDR, which requires any financial market participant of a certain size that markets or provides products within the EU to have detailed disclosure. Right now, it's at the entity level for their due diligence if they're advertising any sustainability process to avoid this kind of greenwashing. So we're now in a state where any financial market participant, especially operating in the EU and US markets, can't put a name on something without actually being able to back it up.
Oh, that's an important point. This to driving a focus on addressing greenwashing and just frankly even ESG in general. So I think it's going to be a very interesting year, a couple of years for us on multiple fronts. Now, just going back to the portfolio construction a bit, Kristen, maybe you can comment a bit here that are going to start helping to drive the improvement in transparency and consistency. We're obviously not there yet. There's a lot of noise with ESG data providers having their own methodologies. How do you even begin to construct an individual portfolio when there is so much inconsistency across these agencies?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, almost every asset manager and wealth professional, I think is trying to figure this out. And that was part of the reason we created Seeds, to make that the process and also the portfolio construction more simple for advisors to really take into their practice and help them work with their clients, deepen relationships, and grow their businesses. And so what we're doing at Seeds is we're bringing in the different data providers. And luckily, there's more and more being reported and more in terms of how you can actually look at ESG. And so we're bringing that in. And instead of starting with just a benchmark, we're starting with really the full universe of companies. And right now, mainly US, but and we're taking that down through a data-driven investment process to get down to a universe where then we have what I just talked about, also the deep dive investment analysis. So actually looking at those companies that make it through what we're, our process and what we're screening out from a data perspective, both on the ESG side and on the financial side. And then once we have that, depending on what the end investor or the client is telling their advisor, we can then create customized portfolios based on the companies that are really strict in terms of the ESG integration, as well as really good from a long-term financial viability. And so I think all of that, you know, it is challenging to do that. That's why a lot of, I think, advisors just buy an ETF or buy a fund. The only problem with that is what we talked about. I mean, a lot of them are maybe, you know, greenwashing. They're including things that maybe you don't believe in and things like that. They're very generic. And so having a platform that actually can be customized to your personal values and your financial goals like Seeds, we think there's a benefit there for investors.
Got it. And I think as three female entrepreneurs presenting on this panel, we, of course, have to talk about diversity and inclusion being one of those areas where a lot of dollars are being thrown by corporations, but we're not necessarily seeing that accountability and some of these initiatives really shape out and drive meaningful value just yet. So we're early days there. Megan, you've been very actively involved in building some of this transparency. And just like Kristen's been working on this from the from the retail investor side, you're seeing it from the corporate and institutional investor side. Could you highlight a little bit more about that diversity and inclusion framework and the level of comprehension you're putting in that framework as well?
Yeah, sure. So I think going to what you said and what Kristen said, that, you know, this pressure to avoid greenwashing or diversity washing and having these high level targets without a lot to back it up, companies are now trying to really figure out how they can implement this in a tangible way that responds to investor as well as other stakeholder pressure. So what we've been doing is making sure that our frameworks and evaluating company strategies are based on the standards that exists that can improve how ratings providers examine this and make sure that disclosure is more tangible to avoid this type of greenwashing. So with diversity and inclusion, for example, it's been traditionally very quota-based, which isn't really holistic for a company's operations and realistic for certain sectors. You really need to look at it from a holistic approach and a governance approach as well, and look at how a company is engaging with stakeholders. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can set targets for and report on diversity metrics, but if you're not improving training, recruiting, as well as examining your products, it can have a significant approach and we've a significant impact on consumers because consumers are really pushing a lot of these changes that we've seen in the past year, especially with branding. So making sure that, you know, we're really looking at a company's full value chain is critical.
Right. And I think the highlight is everyone looks at the diversity stats, but then if you start looking at inclusionary practices and getting into the weeds of it, it becomes a lot more challenging and more complex. And I think that's where a lot of the analysis gets left behind.
Yeah. And I agree. Just to add on to that, you know, if you're just focusing on the numbers and not focusing on your perceptions, outward perceptions and practices, you could have significant controversies that will have a financial impact on your company.
So speaking of controversies, and you know, we've gone through a lot on the processes and the importance of that from both an active and a passive management, and really the investment process is so critical in understanding the business models for companies. When I think about controversies, I think of Amazon, actually. You know, great stock, obviously, for all the obvious reasons for many years, and obviously last year, But if we think about it from the standpoint of their ESG profile, it really wasn't until August where things really changed at the company, thanks to a lot of pressure from shareholders. So Megan, for the benefit of our listeners, can you walk through how ESG plays into the operational aspect and the financial viability to your earlier point?
Yep. So with Amazon, they've faced a lot of pressure over the past year to make changes in its operations for climate, whether it be putting a full fleet of electric vehicles, decreasing their packaging. They've gotten a lot of flack for that from not just investors, but also consumers, looking at their labor issues, data security and data privacy. And the pressure, as you said, has been both on an investor, consumer, and it's also been regulatory driven. Ultimately, with Bezos stepping down in February, the company's gotten a lot of backlash for racial bias, pay equity, packaging waste, carbon footprint, and it's had to pay over $60 million in a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission in February related to charges that it was misrepresenting drivers' earnings and mishandling drivers' tips.
Very interesting. And Kristen, is this where you were commenting earlier about the importance of active management flowing through? You know, how do you approach the Amazon example?
Yeah, it's a great example. Exactly. So, you know, some of the ESG data can be backward looking. And so if you look at some of those, the different areas and metrics that Megan just mentioned, it could be rated from some of those ESG data providers as a good company and a good investment. And so if you're relying on like a robot platform, a robo-advisor to create you an index and use just data to bring in certain companies like Amazon, you know, it could be including certain companies like that. Whereas if you really dig into some of the companies and issues and what they're saying and have an eye toward not just the data, but also a qualitative view on it from an investment perspective, that really can help you in terms of constructing portfolios. And so, you know, luckily it sounds like Amazon's turning it around, and that's just an example, of course. But I think that's where we think, you know, active management in addition to the data is really important. And the other thing I think about that is how important the stories are, right? So when we're at Seeds, when we're working with financial advisors and their end clients, it's not just about necessarily the metrics and the data, but it's about those company stories that people want to hear and they want to relate to.
That's interesting. And it's also interesting to see how engagement has really picked up, right? Whether you're looking on a retail level, institutional level, and how engagement matters. And I think when we start seeing the results of this coming proxy season, it'll be very apparent that we'll see a lot more of interactivity with companies. And even from an investor standpoint, the topics that we have all discussed over the past year will be top of mind in some of these reports. So I'd like to end on one final question, which is really talking about impact. Now, we found that there are a lot of investment options. Let's assume we're all getting more comfortable with the ESG data. Regulations are helping to drive that improvement in disclosure. But how does an investor at the end of the day know that their portfolio is having a positive impact on the world? And Megan, I'll start with you here, given your deep experience on the impact side from your MSCI days.
Yeah, I think that it's the story that companies ultimately tell and how they do it in an effective way and making sure that it's actually true. From the corporate side, what we try to do really is help companies communicate to investors. Once a company has sustainable operations and cultures, it's really important to show those metrics and make sure that they're measurable, again, to help with this data issue. And you know, just like a financial statement, ESG metrics, when possible, should be quantitative and examined against measurable and achievable targets so they can be accountable. And again, make sure that it's specific to a company's operations. You don't just want to throw in metrics there because they're trendy. You really want to make it applicable to your operations. And some metrics that we're seeing is, you know, an electronic fleet, vehicle fleet by 2023, measuring tons of wastes from manufacturing, making sure that there's no human rights incidences, which is also regulatory driven, and other really high risk labor or consumer issues. Impact metrics, really, they're not consistently used in a lot of investment strategies, which Kristen can speak to more. And why Seeds is different when it comes to building an ESG-oriented investment, especially with ETFs. A lot of ETFs are thematic, so they'll be focused around renewable energy or clean tech, or they'll have the label of ESG-oriented, but they rely on an ESG rating sometimes. Additionally, a renewable fund, for example, could incorporate specific carbon emissions metrics, but they might not look at other issues such as labor or social issues.
That's an excellent point, and particularly comes across as you're working with corporations too in terms of developing a more customized impact metric route as well. And then Kristen, you all recently partnered with Just Capital to focus on a lot of the impact side of things. But what are your thoughts in terms of how does an investor know that they're really having a positive impact on the world, depending on how they're investing in their portfolio?
Yeah, we at Seeds think about this from a behavioral finance point of view. And so as part of the process that a financial advisor would sit down with a client and undergo, it really, there's a few questions in that survey process that really gets to how does the end individual think and how do they make decisions. And so what resonates for one person in terms of the impact they're having may not resonate with somebody else, depending if the investor is more analytical and they just want to see that ESG investments perform better financially, or if they're more big picture and they want to see their impact and they want, you know, those stories. So they want to hear about the end company and what they're doing for the world. And so within the Seeds platform experience, at the end of that survey process, the advisor can then propose, you know, the investment portfolio we talked about, the multi-asset portfolio. And in addition, we're showing the impact metrics. So the proposed portfolio, what type of different impact that can have. So, you know, the average company in your portfolio, in your Seeds portfolio, performs 86% better, let's say, than in terms of recycling than the average company or other different impact areas. And what was so important to us is to partner with Just Capital, who, you know, is really industry leading in terms of the consumer sentiment and what's really important to U.S. consumers all over. And so they rank I think 1,000 companies, and they have a list of those, you know, across all different impact metrics. And so what was important to us is to have a third party really, really analyze our portfolios and put those third party metrics on the site. And so it's not just Seed saying, oh, look how great these portfolios are, but having a third party actually show tangible impacts. So how well is, you know, the product governance of the companies in a Seeds portfolio versus other companies you could be invested in. And so it's, you know, just like the AllianceBernstein partnership on the investment side we mentioned earlier, the partnership with Just Capital is really important to us from the social impact metrics. And so, but that said, you know, it is important to speak to the end investor and what they care about. And so is that talking about the actual stories? Is that talking about the statistics? Is that talking about, you know, there's many ways to talk about and position ESG investing, but it all goes back to this really is something that could be for everyone and is just potentially a better way to invest.
And it's an interesting way to think about that behavioral finance angle. That's super interesting. You know, before I pass the mic back to Matthias, I want to thank you both for your insights. And it's just incredible to me how everyone's coming back with ESG with very different backgrounds, whether it's from the investment management side, product strategy development, corporate lens, research. And we're all coming back to the same point of the importance of transparency, consistency, having a disciplined approach towards it to address greenwashing, and the importance of having that knowledge base to do that. And and offering to clients, whether they're corporates, whether they're institutional, whether they're retail, just being able to walk them through that process so they can understand how to build their own portfolios and or build their businesses accordingly. So you all are coming from very different angles, yet it's interesting we're all coming to that same conclusion. So I want to thank you both for your super interesting highlights and perspectives on your businesses. And I'm going to pass this back to Matthias.
Great. So thank you all. Thank you, Niti, for moderating this, Kristen and Megan, fantastic panelists. This was an extremely relevant discussion, and this is also the reason why I have recorded it, and I'm going to broadcast this as our podcast. You find our podcast when you Google for alternative investments : Clubhouse sessions. So we will be back here on Clubhouse. Please watch the opales.com/live section. We are not only doing this on Clubhouse, but also streaming on YouTube and Facebook for everyone who does not have a Clubhouse account. So I'm going to end the broadcast now. I'm going to end the room. I am thanking, of course, also all our listeners today. Be well, all the best. And of course, we'll all stay tuned to ESG. I live in Europe. I have seen the theme emerge on the institutional side, on the retail side. It's my personal conviction that this is a process that will actually not end. So ESG will become better, more important, and penetrate more of what all we are doing here in the financial industry. Thanks again, everyone. Thanks, our panelists. All the best. Bye-bye. And that was it for today's podcast version of the Alternative Investments Show. Thank you for joining and subscribing to our service. You can always email me at nab@opales.com. Also, if you're interested in joining our show as a guest. If you liked what you heard and want to support us, please write a review to help others discovering the service.